live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University. It is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's current sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? That's right. It's about that time. Happy Monday to you all. July 15th. That's right. We are right now in the smack dab middle of July 2019. I really hope you all are having a great, 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 great summer. My favorite season throughout the year. Right next to fall. I like fall a lot, too. But summer, I mean, you can't beat this weather. Many will complain about the humidity and it's too hot. And I don't want to hear that, man. You know, it's Michigan, you know, where we only get weather like this like 3 months out of the year. So I am enjoying it, and I hope you are too, all right? Thank you so much for allowing us to be a part of your Monday. A lot to get to on today's current sports. On today's show, I'm going to talk about a few things. A sad passing of one of the greatest boxers of all time. He makes my top 10 list without a doubt. And a really unfortunate story to pass along to you guys that occurred around 10 p.m. last night. I'll give you the details of that story and put in perspective the greatness of Parnell Sweet P. Whitaker. Gone far too soon, folks. Far too soon. Also, the NBA is deciding to make some changes when it comes to challenges. You know, if they don't like something that happens on the floor, you know, it's going to be like football. You will have, you know, some challenges to work with now, and you can challenge a call on the floor. And then the refs will go to the monitor. You know, it's going to have a football feel in that regard, right? You know, when you have challenge flags, you throw out the red flag in the NFL, and then you go look at the monitor. This is good for the game. And I'm going to give you the details of these new coaches' challenges and I'll let you decide. All right, and you'll get my thoughts on it, of course. Also, the Wimbledon finals took place over the weekend. And I'll let you know who won, if you haven't heard. And, you know, we'll talk about the greatness of those who participated in this year's Wimbledon finals. It was riveting stuff, folks. Riveting. You don't even have to be a diehard tennis fan to appreciate what occurred on both Saturday and Sunday morning. Awesome stuff. And then we will take you on home with weekend winners, all right? But, again, a great hour coming right to your ear. Or maybe you're watching at Facebook.com/WKAR News. If you are listening, thank you so much for turning that dial to WKAR AM 870 1051 FM. Also, you may be listening to the podcast version of the show at WKAR.org, or you may be streaming the show live right there at WKAR.org. So no matter how you're tuned in, we thank you so much. You know what's next. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners. All right, I want to start by bringing you news about the weekend that was for Lansing Ignite. Because for the second time in three matches, a controversial officiating call went against Ignite, Lansing's very own professional soccer club, costing the club precious points in a race for the top four in the standings and the USL League One playoffs. Now, in the 52nd minute, Rhys Williams, he was called for a handball in the box, giving Tucson a penalty kick. Williams received a yellow card, and Jordan Jones hit the ensuing penalty to bring the match level. And Nate Miller, head coach of Ignite, he did not bite his tongue. He did not hold back any punches. This is one of the most candid responses I have heard from a coach in a long, long time. This is what Nate Miller had to say. Quote, "The refereeing in this league has been absolutely horrific, and our team is paid for it. I think they should stop experimenting on our league and start sending us half-decent officials." He didn't stop there. Quote, "My biggest problem with this is if a fourth official is telling the referee through his headset that it's a handball on Tucson, and he's the one that saw it, and the referee's the one that doesn't respond and use that credible resource, it makes no sense," end quote. And then, Nate, I mean, it was about a rant of at least 90 seconds that I saw online, and he also proceeded to say that, you know, he feels like maybe something is fixed when it comes to his team. Also, I you know, who they play next. Let me look here at Lansing Ignite's schedule, because he noted that the next game for Ignite, and, you know, I guess they're going on the road to travel to play in that match, you know, has even worse referees. He actually said that. He's like, yeah, we're going to. It's at Toronto FC in 4 days. On Friday, this Friday at 4 p.m., Lansing Ignite will take on Toronto FC. And Nate Miller, at one point in the interview, he's like, yeah, now we have to go to Toronto. And their officials are even worse. So Nate Miller was just not pleased. Not pleased at all, especially with that moment. And Lansing Ignite, if you go to Lansing Ignite's Twitter page, you can see the handball call that went against Ignite that led to that penalty kick. And it's so clear, clear as day, that the soccer ball did not hit Rhys Williams on the hand. So, yeah, there you have that, folks. Nate Miller, I appreciate the honesty there, Nate. All right, Central Michigan University has announced that Heather Oesterle has been named the 12th head coach of the women's basketball program. Now, Oesterle has served on the CMU coaching staff for the past 9 seasons, including the last 7 as the associate head coach. She takes over for Sue Guevara, who retired this week after 12 seasons. A press conference will be held, and that event is open to the public. So congratulations to Heather Oesterle, who I believe also has roots right here in mid-Michigan, Mason to be exact, for getting that promotion. All right, Ypsilanti Lincoln's Imani Bates has only played 1 year of high school basketball and already holds 3 NC2A Division I scholarship offers. He picked up his 3rd on Friday from Tom Izzo and the Michigan State men's basketball program at the Peach Jam in Atlanta, which is considered the best AAU basketball tournament of the summer. Bates, the top-ranked player nationally in the 2022 class, also holds offers from Florida State and DePaul. And if you have not watched a highlight reel of Imani Bates, please do it after the show. It's pretty amazing watching this young man play. Imani Bates is pretty good. All right, the Las Vegas Summer League is over for the Detroit Pistons following a 105-85 loss to the Brooklyn Nets in the quarterfinals on Saturday night at Thomas and Mack Center. Jordan Bone, who started for Brown, had 18 points. Kyrie Thomas, 15 points, 5 rebounds. And Jared Utoff had 12 points for the Pistons. Sekou Doumbouya, he was good in his first minutes of summer league, making his first 2 field goals before going 1-for-5 the rest of the way. Hamstring injuries bothered him for all of the summer league, so it was hard
to really good, get a good gauge on his strengths. He looked a bit lost defensively at times. He entered Saturday. He didn't look out of place, though. So, again, it's hard to judge Siku on just that brief stint in the summer league. We'll see what happens in his rookie season with the Detroit Pistons. Also, Connor Mathis, behind the glass, engineer of today's current sports. Have you seen the NBA draft video of Jordan Bone when he found out that he was drafted to the Detroit Pistons? It went viral. Google that after the show. Or you can do it now.
I'll give it a look.
Check it out. It is amazing. It looked like, you know, Jordan Bone, he was gathered with family and friends. They had this big projector up of the NBA draft, and it looked like Jordan was not going to be drafted. And you can see him on his phone in the video, just kind of down and out. So his brother grabbed the mic, Connor, and his brother starts to give this speech to everybody who came out. Like, hey, everybody who came out, you know, hey, this isn't the end of the road for my brother. You know, he's worked his tail off. You know, we're still shooting for this dream. In the middle of the speech, and it's really quiet, too, quiet and somber, in the middle of his brother's speech, somebody yells, oh, they took him, or something like that. And everybody from that crowd just bombards him on the stage, and tears, you'll get emotional watching it. It is awesome stuff. So Jordan Bone, and he can ball, too. I think that was a really good get for the Detroit Pistons. But check out that video as well, all right? So you got two things to YouTube after 2 p.m. All right, the Detroit Pistons will hold an annual auction. An online, not annual, online auction for collectibles honoring the history of the former home of the Pistons, the Palace of Auburn Hills. Now, the auction started on Thursday at 10 a.m., and a portion of all sales will benefit the Detroit Pistons Foundation. Available collectibles include a 16-foot Pistons hand-sewn banner, vinyl wall murals of Pistons All-Stars, photos celebrating the Detroit Pistons NBA championship, teams and legends, Pistons logos and other arena signage, used player lockers, the Pistons official locker room doors, and so much more. Actually, more than 3,000 items, including arena seats, will be for sale as part of 5 individual online sale categories commencing sequentially from July through August. So you guys know I'm a big Detroit Pistons fan. I may try and get in on that. All right. I'll probably save my Amazon Prime Day money for that, maybe. All right. the Detroit Tigers. I'll just say this. They lost 2 of 3 to the Kansas City Royals. Of all teams in the majors, the Kansas City Royals beat the Detroit Tigers 2 of 3 games in a weekend set. Embarrassing, I think so. Also, former Detroit Lions head coach Jim Caldwell is taking a step back from the Miami Dolphins organization. Your Miami Dolphins organization, Connor. The organization announced on Saturday that Caldwell, slated to be a Miami's assistant head coach and quarterback coach, will take a leave of absence to address health issues and instead serve as a team consultant for next season. This is what Caldwell said on the team's official website. Quote, I will be stepping back due to some medical complications that require my full attention. I want to thank Stephen Ross, Chris Grier, Coach Flores, and the rest of the organization for the support they have given me and my family. So, Chris Grier, thank you for that correction, Connor. So, Jim Caldwell, again, taking a leave of absence, wishing him well, man, hoping that it's nothing too serious and that he is back on an NFL sideline soon. Okay, in a stunning nearly 5-hour match that broke records and tested new rules, Novak Djokovic, he defeated Roger Federer. What a match it was. Oh, that was so fun to watch. In the Wimbledon's men's championship on Sunday morning, defending his 2018 title, clocking in at 4 hours and 57 minutes, but it was well worth all 4 hours and 57 minutes, folks. The match was the longest men's singles final in Wimbledon history, and had it not been for a new rule that requires a tiebreaker if both players score 12-12 in the final set, it could have even gone longer. So, congratulations to Novak Djokovic. And also, another viral video that went, that went everywhere over the weekend. There was a reporter, I'm not sure what publication it was, but a female tennis reporter was interviewing Roger Federer after the match. And apparently, she thought that Roger Federer had won. So she's interviewing Federer and saying, congratulations on the win. You know, how is this going to propel you into the next phase of your tennis season? And Federer's like, I actually lost. And the reporter, we all have that, I know guy. You know that, I know guy, kind of when you know, everybody has one, like a friend or a family member, like when you call them out on something wrong, I know. When you don't know, clearly. But she's like, I know. When clearly you just said that Roger Federer hadn't won.
You just sat through 4 hours of tennis. How do you not know that he won or lost?
Exactly. Jeez. So, I didn't. It's pretty funny though. It is pretty funny. I mean, Federer was very classy about it. He's like, I did not win. And she's just like, I know. Of course. There you have that. And also in the Wimbledon women's final, Simona Halep became the first Romanian to win Wimbledon when she stunned the American Serena Williams 6-2, 6-2, and what had become one of the finest performances in a final in the tournament's recent history. So Serena got there, just couldn't finish the deal, though. Simona Halep is so, so good. All right, that does it for your quick hit headliners. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527. Comment below our live stream or just watch there at facebook.com/WKAR News. And you can tweet us, tweet me directly at Al Martin, WKAR, or tweet the show at WKAR News.
It's obvious from the rounds we've seen so far, Dan, that that's accurate. Just back foot and boom.
Serving throughout the whole fight is that Huertado's beating Whitaker to a kick.
Oh, what a left hand by Whitaker! And he takes advantage with four more straight left. Arthur McCann watching. And it's over. It is over. Cornell Whitaker rescues himself from
that. He was there on the ropes. He couldn't escape. And he wasn't returning any fire.
Stopping right there would have been okay. That's okay. That would have done. That would have been nice. I think Arthur would like to have that one back.
Welcome, if you're just now tuning in, to this Monday edition of WKAR's Current Sports. A few highlights there from the career, the remarkable career of Pernell Sweet P. Whitaker. The reason why I'm rolling in those highlights is because last night, Whitaker was killed as he was hit by a car in Virginia Beach, Virginia. He was just 55 years old. 55 years old. And, you know, this certainly, you know, when I got the news this morning as I was preparing for today's show, when I read this news on my laptop, kind of took me aback, man, because, you know, Pernell Whitaker growing up in the 90s, you know, with my grandfather, who he's the man who introduced me to the sweet science, to the incredible sport that is boxing. I have fond memories going over to my my grandmother's house, my grandparents' house on the weekends. You know, my sister and I, and we would arrive on Saturday evening, and there's my grandfather getting ready, getting his popcorn and beverage ready for the fights on HBO or Showtime that were taking place on that Saturday night. And we would just sit there and watch every single one as he would break down and move with every fighter. You know, it was so funny watching my grandfather on the couch just kind of move like he's actually fighting. So and Pernell Whitaker was one of the guys. Those were one of his guys. You know, he would rave and educate me on just how good Pernell Whitaker was. And, you know, he was a long time pound-for-pound king, one of the greatest boxers in the history of the sport. All my young pups out there who don't watch boxing or never heard of Pernell Whitaker prior to today, please, again, add that to your YouTube list later on today. Pernell Whitaker, arguably next to Floyd Mayweather. You can go back and forth. You can make an argument for both. But many people out there believe that Pernell Whitaker was the greatest defensive boxer of all time. And that's why when you get into these barbershop debates out there, who could beat Floyd Mayweather? And when it comes to my thoughts on Floyd, I thought that he dodged some of his biggest opponents. But that's another sidebar. But Pernell Whitaker's name is always brought up. You know, if you could choose somebody in their prime to give Floyd the business, Pernell Whitaker and Sugar Ray Leonard, those two names always come up from those that watched his greatness on display. So when it comes to this unfortunate incident, man, the Virginia Police Department said that the incident remains an active investigation, but that Whitaker was apparently hit by a vehicle around 10 p.m. last night when he was walking at an intersection. TMZ Sports reports that, it's a bit odd while he was walking in that particular area. I guess there's a bunch of fast food restaurants in that area, so maybe Pernell was getting something to eat, and then this happens. So Virginia Beach Police Department spokesman L.M. Bauder said in a statement, quote, when officers arrived on the scene, they located an adult male victim who had been hit by a vehicle, that being Whitaker. Whitaker succumbed to his injuries on the scene. The driver of the vehicle remained on the scene with police. And this is just another sobering reminder in this thing that we call life, that life is so precious and it can be taken at any moment's notice. You know, appreciate every single day that you wake up and you've got breath in your body because anything could happen, folks. Now, when it comes to the career of Whitaker, just to briefly go through just how good this dude was, he's from Virginia. He was elected into the International Boxing Hall of Fame in 2006. He won world titles in four weight classes. He was the undisputed lightweight world champ. Also won titles at junior welterweight, and junior middleweight as one of the dominant fighters in boxing for much of the 1980s and 1990s. He also won a gold medal at the 1984 Olympics. And throughout much of the 90s, I mean, you know, Pernell Whitaker, you know, he was the measuring stick. I mean, he was the best pound-for-pound fighter for a long, long time, folks. And, you know, you hear other boxers just raving and in shock about this news, because this is a major blow to the boxing family. And, you know, his overall record, 44-1. 40 wins, 4 losses, 1 draw, 17 KOs. And, you know, he may have had those 4 losses and that draw on his record, but in my opinion, he only lost twice. You know, when you look at his record and look at those 4 losses, you know, he lost in a controversial decision to Oscar De La Hoya. Many believed that Whitaker actually won that fight. When you look at it, I thought that, you know, Parnell Whitaker won that fight. I've seen that fight replayed on, like, you know, on ESPN multiple times and watched the YouTube clips. But they gave it to Oscar De La Hoya. And then also, you know, Felix Trinidad, he did win by indecision. I thought Felix did win that fight as well. But, you know, that's when Felix was really at the top of his game and you know, in his prime. That was at MSG back in 1999. But to have a record like that, I mean, 44-1, that's truly, truly amazing. And then also you could bring up, you know, the fourth round stoppage to Carlos Borjarez when Whitaker actually suffered a broken clavicle in that fight. So it was stopped early because Whitaker broke his clavicle. But just an amazing career. And what made, for those that watched Parnell Whitaker, you know, I talk about his defense and just how pure it was. I mean, what made Parnell Whitaker so fun to watch is he used to do this thing with his head where, I mean, he would stand right in front of you and you would try and hit him. He's right there in front of you, but he was so fast and his reflexes were so good that he could move his head around and just simply dodge you left and right. And for me, I think the best aspect of Parnell Whitaker was not just the defense, but also, and he stole this from the great Muhammad Ali. Ali was the expert of this. And, you know, you can make the argument that Parnell perfected it to another level. But the lunging jab and shuffle circle, you know, you've seen the clips of Ali, right, where he's kind of just jabbing his guy, lunging forward, and then just shuffling in a circle around his opponent, making it very difficult for that opponent to counter and to get a good hit on Ali. Well, that was a part of Parnell Whitaker's game as a southpaw, which is very difficult because that inside foot is matched up. If you're fighting a righty, is matched up in line with that opponent's foot. So to lunge as a southpaw with that technique and to pick and choose, and this is also what made Parnell Whitaker so brilliant, to pick and choose when to move his foot outside and hit you with a left crosser. Oh, it was so beautiful to watch, man. He was so fun to watch. And a true, true boxer to the essence of what is called the sweet science. So this is a big loss. I'm curious for all my fight listeners out there, you know, my fight fans out there, your reaction to Parnell Whitaker passing away. You know, are you a fan of his? If you're a fan of his, did you watch him? Where he ranks in your all-time list? But this is really unfortunate stuff. Just 55 years old, hit by a car and passing away. And, you know, as great as Parnell was, you know, many, many, many ponder how much greater he could have been because he had a troubled life, man. You know, he's one of those fighters that you look at his career and say, ah, I mean, what if, right? Because he did have a problem with drugs. You know, he had a drug addiction that was a part of his life. That really plagued him throughout his career, you know, and his problems continue. When he said goodbye to boxing, he actually survived a cocaine overdose and in 2002 was convicted of cocaine possession. So that was a demon of his. But that's not the thing that took him out. Again, just, you know, walking an intersection and gets hit by a car. Just a really sad day, folks. For one of what was the one of the greatest boxers of all time. Connor, I don't know if you probably didn't watch Parnell Whitaker. You probably didn't know who Parnell Whitaker was probably until the day, maybe. I don't know. I don't know if you heard his name before, but, you know, this generation, you know, because I'm a millennial, you know, I'm 28 years old. In the early 90s, you know, I was like, you know, I bring up the fight, you know, Parnell Whitaker versus like Felix Trinidad, you know, and Oscar De La Hoya. I was like, you know, I was 7 years old when he fought Oscar De La Hoya. And I remember that fight. Me and my grandfather watched that fight, but I vaguely remember it. It didn't really hit me just how good he was until I got older and began to look at clips of him back in the day. I remember the Felix Trinidad fight as well, you know, watching that with my grandfather. And I believe my grandfather actually threw a fight party. There were a lot of people over to watch that. And I'll never forget Felix Trinidad because the name Trinidad because, you know, my mom is from, she's born and raised in Trinidad and Tobago. And just, you know, that just that name, right? Tito Trinidad is what they call him. But he's Puerto Rican. No affiliation with Trinidad and Tobago whatsoever, which is kind of weird. But I'll never forget that fight because, oh, Trinidad, I'm going to root for Trinidad because my mom's from Trinidad. That was the thinking back in the day. But if there's anybody, though, who I think really could have given, you know, Floyd Mayweather a run for a really good run for his money and probably would have beat him, I think it's Pernell Whitaker. So I'm curious to see how this generation reacts to this death as you look at some YouTube clips. Have you ever seen him on film at all, Connor?
No, I mean, I watch boxing kind of sparingly. I'm into more of the heavyweight stuff now, especially since the new big three out there. But I mean, even like before, my mom was a big boxing fan, but I think she had stopped watching probably around the time that Whitaker got going.
Gotcha. Well, yeah, do yourself a favor, man, and watch some clips. It's pretty remarkable. It's just so fun to watch him fight because of his style. Because of his speed, his reflexes, because of his defense and his footwork, he was what many people consider to be the perfect fighter. So rest in peace, Pernell Whitaker, gone far, far too soon. All right, let's hit our first break. When we come back, I want to talk some Wimbledon. I also want to talk about this new implementation from the National Basketball Association that will allow coaches to challenge calls on the court. Is this good for the game, or have we completely lost our minds here in 2019? That and more. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. All right, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. The NBA will now allow coaches to challenge calls next season. How about that? The decision was approved at the annual Board of Governors meeting, and ESPN describes the circumstances under which a challenge can be made. These are the details. Quote, teams can use one challenge per game, regardless of whether it is successful, and it can be utilized to question a variety of instances, including a call, personal foul on the coach's own team, an out-of-bounds call, goaltending, or basket interference. The challenge can be used at any point during the game. So, folks, if we're talking about, you know, personal fouls, out-of-bounds calls, goaltending, I mean, those are instances that can possibly decide a game in crunch time. However, in the final 2 minutes of the fourth quarter or overtime, any out-of-bounds goaltending or basket interference call will be automatically triggered for review and are not challengeable. So those will be reviewed anyway. To challenge a play, a team must have a timeout and call one after the play. And then it's coach. And this is pretty comical. This is probably the most comical part of this whole thing for me, Connor. And you know how in the NFL you have a flag, right? You just throw the flag out there. Looks kind of cool, too, if you just launch a flag. But the challenge of playing the NBA, its coach must, quote, twirl his finger toward the referees.
Well, they've been doing – it's this. They've been doing that for unofficially for – you know, years, however long they've had that replay review in the last 2 minutes, is every single time something doesn't go the team way, you see the whole team doing this.
Yeah, that's it's so stupid. The twirl just looks stupid. You're just twirling your
finger. It's not a flag, but
can
I mean...
Can we have something cooler?
Like, I mean, knowing most NBA coaches, if they had a flag, they'd probably just beam the ref with it. So.
Yeah, or... I can get sticky with basketball because on football field, it's so big, it's so massive, that's 100 yards.
Unless your coach has a cannon, he's not going to hit the ref. But on basketball court, if the coach is pissed, he's hitting the referee.
What if you had like an air horn? What if you just had a blow horn? Just, that'd be kind of annoying, though.
But right in the sideline ref, right in his ear.
Exactly. But yeah, you got to twirl your finger. Twirl your finger. And that's how you signal that you want to challenge something. So if a team doesn't have a timeout and attempts to challenge a play, it will be charged, so you can get punished for that. You know, you will be charged a technical foul and no challenge will occur. And there must be clear and conclusive visual evidence to overturn a call. The big question I have here, Connor, is this really needed? Do we really need to go as far as to give a coach a challenge that can be used? Again, at the end of the day, I mean, when you talk about, you know, goaltending or a personal foul, these are situations that can decide ball games. And I get it. You know, referees aren't perfect. No official is perfect, no matter what level of sport you're talking about, no matter what sport you are talking about. Just ask Nate Miller, right? I get that. But, you know, are we removing the referee far too much here in 2019? That is the question I have, because I don't believe that the official is a big problem in today's National Basketball Association. I think what the problem is, if I have one big gripe with the association today, is that it's over officiated when it comes to the rules. I love how the game was called. You guys know this. I love how the game was called back in the 90s, back in the 80s. It allowed for more physicality. Nowadays, if you just touch a player, the whistle was being blown. I hate that aspect of it. But the referees have a job to do, so they are just calling it the way it is written in the rule book. As far as, you know, games being decided on you know, a bad call by a referee, it's not often that you see that. It's not a huge problem where I think the NBA needs to implement this system, Connor. I think this is a big, big overreaction. And, you know, I'm old school in this regard, man. It's like just, and it's just far too much complaining already from players and so on and so forth. I just don't think that this is needed in the game today. I don't like this.
See, I disagree with you. I think they hit it right. I think they have the one challenge is fine. Win it or lose it, you get one. What I don't like about this is the fact that you can't use it in the last 2 minutes. And the only reason I say this is because, yes, basket interference is reviewed. Yes, goaltending review. But if there's a crap foul call in the last 2 minutes of the game and you have the opportunity to challenge it, that seems to me like the ideal opportunity. I'm a head coach. I'm saving my challenge for the last 2 minutes of the game, or the last 2 minutes of the fourth quarter, the last 2 minutes of overtime, where if the mistake happens, it affects the game, you know, as a, you know, win or lose. I don't understand limiting the challenging of a foul call to that point in time. And I think part of it, the reason why the NFL, or no, NBA, geez, listen to me, I'm thinking football already, but NBA is going this far is because they have that bad reputation of officials back in the early 2000s of, man, these guys may have waited some of these games to benefit them in gambling. And
The whole Tim Donaghy conversation, look. Tim Donaghy, without a doubt, was wrong. He was dirty. I've heard him do interviews. I think he even has a book out, you know, about how he rigged. I will say this. He still stands by. It's so crazy when it comes to Tim Donaghy. He still stands by, you know, the fact that he did not, his officiating back when he officiated, did not decide games, did not decide whether a team won or lost. But
the, you know, Kings would like to have a word
when it comes to Vegas odds. Mm-hmm. He would do that from time to time. So dirty. But it's not like, but again, you know, if there's one rotten apple in the bunch, then it's hard to believe there's not others.
It's
right?
A stain on the league. It's a stain on the league.
But Connor, and that was a while ago. I'm talking about in today's game, it's very rare when I have come on this air or have you know, had conversations in the barbershop or with my homies who are NBA fans where we're discussing the referees and how bad they were, where it's like, oh, boy, I wish – I've never had a discussion where when I'm talking to somebody about the NBA or an NBA game and saying, oh, boy, I wish coaches could challenge. You know, that's amazing. It hasn't been a problem where you need this in the game. And then the whole situation with, you know, you have to stop the game, right? And then we already have a problem in today's NBA where it's like, oh, my goodness, how many times do you have to look at that play to understand that, okay – it's pretty obvious what happened here. And then it messes up the flow. You're sitting there twiddling your fingers, scrolling on Twitter, waiting for the game to resume action. We already have too much stoppage in the game. I think that if you're going to implement this, they're already going to implement it. It has to go to the system where they go to, what's that hub out in New Jersey, right?
Oh, it's like the Central League office.
Which the Central League office.
I think
you have somebody making a decision within, like, a minute. You know what I mean?
Instead I think of that's the next step of this. I mean, you have to get your foot in the door somehow. I think you start with the officials just sitting there and looking at it, and then probably a year or two from now, people will say, well, this is taking too much time. Just send it to the central hub. That's like what the NFL does, is they originally had it where, you know, the officials sit around and look at it, but now it just goes to the headquarters in New York, and they have, you know, the headquarters decide it. But, you know, the thing I will say about this, about it being implemented, is I think it's a response to the, you know, the fouls we see on a lot of 3-point shooters, where it's, well, that wasn't really a foul, but the guy sold it. So as a ref, I saw the guy fall to the ground like he just got decked. I've got to call it. I think that's probably the response to it, without having to go in and physically change the rules on how you defend a jump shooter. I think that's what it's a response to.
The James Harden conversation.
The James Hardens, the Klay Thompsons, the Steph Currys who kick out their foot and then collapse to the ground like they just got hit by a car.
But if you're only getting one, It's not like you're getting a bunch of them where you can just, because it's not like James just does that one time throughout the game. He does it multiple times throughout the game. So if you're only getting one and you can't even use it, you know, in the last 2 minutes of the game, well, what's the point?
See, that's where I'm confused. I don't understand why you wouldn't be able to challenge a foul call in the last 2 minutes, because that's where a lot of coaches and players get frustrated in the post game. It's like, well, this guy, he kicked out his leg, and what am I supposed to do? I can't land somewhere. I don't understand that part.
I don't see how this is beneficial at all. I look at this and say, this is just going to be another point in the game where you just have to wait around and just, you know, wait for the referees to go to the monitor and then look. It's too much. We are over-regulating things now at this point. And they've already implemented review for when a ball goes out of bounds and things like that.
In the last 2 minutes,
You know, in the last 2 minutes. It's like now you're going to give them a challenge, and they've experimented with it in the summer league. You know, I just don't enjoy it. I don't enjoy watching
that. The only silver lining to it, as I'll say, is it's one challenge a game. So is it really going to add? Man. Is it really going to add that much of a stoppage? I mean, maybe coaches use this as a strategic point, like another team's going on a run, and I don't know if that was out of bounds on my guy. I'm just going to throw the challenge flag, and I'm going to try to you know slow the momentum a little bit. Without having to really, well, you're still using a timeout. So, I mean, I don't know.
I got another thing to get off my chest real quick when it comes to the association. Kind of this whole talk about the NBA going from 82 games to, I don't know, like 60 or 50. You're shortening.
I think it's like 64 is the current talk.
That's what they're talking about. It's ridiculous to me. I'm sitting here saying to myself, you know, because people are complaining, players. Not people. Players are complaining about injuries. Now, I don't know if you saw this piece that was done. Oh, my goodness. Who wrote the piece?
The ESPN piece?
It's an ESPN piece about young athletes getting injured.
Yep.
Have you read that?
I read a little bit of it. I read the first part.
It's pretty eye-opening.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you have not read the piece, check it out. I don't know the title of it. I'll bring it up on tomorrow's show as well. But it talks about how young athletes, now more than ever, when it comes to basketball, because in basketball, they are seeing an increase of 125%. An injury increase of 125% when it comes to young athletes today. And the reason that is because, frankly, they're being overworked, Connor. Mm-hmm. You know, AAU basketball, you know, all year round.
You do AAU, and then you play for your school, and then you got to do
practices
that
are going 7 days a week when it comes to certain programs out there. I mean, we're overworking our youth today. Now, I know that sounds crazy because I have always argued that, you know, you got to put in hard work.
Soft.
But when it comes in, and I'm always talking about how young athletes today are soft, right? But when it comes to an athlete and the preparation for that athlete, it doesn't all have to be physical, all right? You know, practice is 7 days a week. That is crazy. And having a schedule that's like a 9 to 8 every single day, that is crazy. We're overworking young athletes, and we're seeing that in the numbers. It's right there. So I get that aspect of things. But in the NBA, where players are already, Connor, superstars and other players are already taking a lot of games off, you know, like you know, perfect example, Kawhi Leonard. I mean, he's notoriously known for taking games off and resting his body and, you know, sitting out 20-plus games. Same thing with LeBron. LeBron is all for it. And other athletes as well. I get that. But, you know, for me, I look at this and say, did athletes back in the day in the NBA complain about this crap? Not at all. And they had an 82-game season, and you did not hear anything about an athlete being overworked and needing days off and needing games off. And I sit there and say to myself, okay, you know, if the athlete today is bigger, stronger, more athletic, why do you need all these games off? Or why do you need to shorten the NBA season? I don't understand where this is coming from. I just don't get it,
I have two counterpoints for you. The first counterpoint is, first off, from the NBA perspective, this is not a bad idea. One, you're making your players happy. And two, you're making the regular season much more valuable. You're cutting out some of the games, so now instead of the casual fan tuning out for, I mean let's be real, the casual fan is watching, you know, maybe half of the NBA season.
It's the NBA, man. Yeah. I don't care if you shorten it to 60 games, 50 games, 40 games. But the regular season, the NBA, if you are not a diehard NBA fan, you're just not going to watch all those
games, but it adds more value to it. It's just like the NFL having 16 games means every single game matters. If you reduce it to 64, you add more value to your regular season, so you might get more viewership there. That's the one thing. The other thing I'll bring up too is that, you know, back in the day, yeah, people didn't complain about you know, playing 82 games, but like if you look at a lot of older Hall of Famers, especially like the big men, the Kevin McHales, the Bill Walton, those guys are bruised up. Their feet aren't working.
There's a few aspects of that, because they were used more, one, and the game was a lot more physical. That's another thing. The game is not even physical anymore. You're not getting beat up every time you play in the NBA.
You're right.
It's you're walking through
some of those injuries, especially Kevin McHale's, were use. The grind of an 82 game season combined with, you know, the talent you're facing. So some of it is playing a lot more games, and, you know, as medical technology innovation goes forward, you can find ways to where you're managing a guy so that he plays well in the postseason. I mean, it worked well with Kawhi Leonard. Look at that. I mean, he sits out for, you know, 20 games, and then he comes in the postseason looking fresh as anything. And if I'm an NBA fan, I'll sacrifice 20 regular season games to get my guy balling out in the postseason and just running things until a championship.
I just look at the end of the day, the NBA is making profit off of this 82 game season. More games, more money. Why would you shorten that if the method is already working financially for you? You're taking money out your pocket, in my opinion. And number two, again, I don't understand the complaining, Connor. I mean, it's been this way for a long, long time, and I may sound like the get off, you know, my lawn old guy right now here on the air. But at the end of the day, the formula is working. And if a superstar feels like there's wear and tear on his body, then sit him out. I mean, you don't have to take games away. And now they're looking at this whole thing. I do think this will be compelling. I must admit this. There's one thing I did like
from what Adam Silver
had to say, and it's the midseason tournament.
Ooh, yeah.
That's kind of fun.
Oh, that'd be great.
You're taking a page out of what international soccer does. And, you know, I think that, more details have to be ironed out when it comes to that. And I think you have to kind of map out, okay, what are you playing for and what kind of implications it will have on the season. But I think that's fun. Having a midseason tournament – will add. You talk about adding value to the regular season. That could add some value to the regular season.
And let's be real. That's what basketball does at multiple levels. I mean, you know, there are some leagues where you'll have your regular season, but in like the middle of the year, you'll get a nice little preseason tournament. Or I know the team I used to coach, we had a regular season. Yeah, but there were also preseason, midseason tournaments mm-hmm. that they go play elsewhere outside of the league. So if you reduce the season, I'm saying it's not going to be the end all of everything. I mean, there are ways, and it's not like the NBA seems to be rushing to this decision. It sounds like they're having a conversation with the players and with the owners. It's not like they're saying, we got to cut it down to 64, and that's the way it's going to be from now on.
And then you know what's going to happen too? When you know, we'd love to debate the GOATs in basketball. Then you're gonna have
that layer. Yep.
Then you got to add that layer of the conversation. Now, well, back in our day, they played 82 games, mm-hmm. and the stats, you know, you could go out and score.
And then the other side of that argument is, you played 82 games instead of 64. Your stats are inflated compared to ours.
Exactly. It's just so garbage.
I wouldn't mind that. Make good sports radio, Al.
I guess so. We're talking about it here right now today, right? Jack Kerwin, also behind the glass, has decided to weigh in. Jack, what's up, man? Happy Monday to you.
Yeah, good to see you, man.
Your thoughts on this?
Well, my whole thing is I don't see why the players of – and, I mean, this is an issue outside of the NFL, to Connor's point. This is an issue in the MLB, the NBA, and the NHL in that the seasons are too long. Mm-hmm. My issue is –
and baseball, I'm totally for that. That's ridiculous.
Worst. That one's the worst.
162 games?
Absolutely.
Come on, man.
No, but my issue with it is I don't see how the players would ever go for shortening their season to 60-some games, even if it would make the product better, just because their salaries wouldn't be the same. You know, the owners are missing out on all that revenue. They're not going to pay the players the same amount that they're making on an 82-game season. There's no way.
It's going to take money out their pocket.
Exactly.
That's
so
another
at the end of the day, nobody, I don't think, is really in favor of shortening the season.
I'm with you. I think that's the biggest thing. When you start talking about money.
Yeah.
Then minds start to change.
Out of everyone's pockets.
Exactly. Yeah. I'm totally with you on that. Okay, let's hit our final break. When we come back, we'll put a bow on this Monday edition of Current Sports with weekend winners. We'll be right back. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. A little under 5 minutes left here, and we close out each and every Monday edition of the show with Weekend Winners, where we look at the weekend that was in the sporting world and beyond, and bring you who we thought had the best weekend. Sometimes, you know, I'll have a weekend loser for you as well. But I've got nothing but winners here. I'm going with Simona Halep. Quite remarkable. I was not expecting the dominant performance that she had against Serena Williams. You know, I remember watching Serena in the quarterfinals and the semifinals, and I said to myself, oh my goodness, she looks like the Serena Williams of old. And that forehand, just so unbelievable. But Simona Halep just said, yeah, I hear you. Check out what I can do. And 6-2, 6-2. Amazing, amazing stuff. But I think they're both winners. I mean, Simona, of course, gets the win. But Serena Williams proving that, you know, her, you know, she still got some good days ahead of her. There were many that questioned, you know, whether or not she could still compete on this level, especially after having a baby, not being in the best shape, almost passing away, actually. A lot of people don't know that aspect of that story when it comes to, you know, having her child. But still competing on that kind of level to make it to the Wimbledon final, amazing stuff. And also, you know, the big three, Novak Djokovic, Roger Federer, and Rafael Nadal. What they did in the Wimbledon this year, they're all three just so fun to watch. And you know, Joker pulling out another victory to add to his incredible career. That was fun to watch. That was really fun to watch. 4 hours and 57 minutes, and worth every single minute. Love watching that. I was so intrigued checking that out. And also, one from the world of entertainment. I am a big, big fan, Connor, of the James Bond films. 007. And I don't know if you are. I love Bond. Bond, just the smoothest cat in the world. You know, he saves planet Earth year after year, and does it with a tux that seemingly doesn't get stained. Awesome stuff. I love Daniel Craig. I think he's the greatest Bond of all time. Some news broke yesterday that Bond is getting a makeover, I guess you can say, and is entering a new phase. Bond 25, they're filming Bond 25. This is the 25th film, the final Bond film for Daniel Craig. And according to multiple sources, Lashana Lynch, a 31-year-old actress, she will play 007 in the new James Bond film, I guess after Bond 25. She is going to be the next actor to take the mantle of James Bond. She's not going to be named James Bond, obviously, but she's going to get the agent name 007. And if you don't know who Lashana Lynch is, she played Captain Marvel's best friend in the Marvel movie, Captain Marvel, and she's an amazing, amazing actress. But this is awesome stuff. I know a lot of people were saying, man, can you have a brother as Bond?
See,
can
I'm
you
a little mad it's not my boy Idris.
Yeah,
I'm a little mad.
That's the thing. You know, I thought Idris Elba was going to be the next Bond, you know, finally going to have a black man play Bond. But not only are you having, you know, an African-American individual play 007, but it's also going to be a female. So a female black Bond or a female, you know, black 007. That is pretty awesome, man. So congratulations to Lashana Lynch. I'm excited to see her take over that mantle. That's going to be some interesting writing there, right? All right, anything for you, Connor?
If you count Friday as part of the weekend, I'm having the Oklahoma City Thunder, our winners, bringing in that much assets for Russell Westbrook.
Are you still on this?
I am still on this train, Al. They won that trade, and they're going to get even more when they trade Chris Paul. I think they won that deal.
Where is Chris Paul going to go to? That's another thing.
I have no idea.
Because he's got a massive contract.
He's old, and I don't know. I think his best days are behind him.
I want to tell you why I'm big on this Houston Rockets deal and why I think Russ and James can coexist. I'll do that on tomorrow's show. Thank you so much, though, for tuning into this Monday edition of Current Sports. Have a fantastic afternoon. And as always, be easy, people.